Mini episode 571 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge. You have with you today two FDH Lounge dignitaries, I, Rick Morris, and a gentleman who is the proprietor of Sportsology, Russ Cohen. We are breaking down here in FDH Lounge mini episode number 571, the annual FDH Top 30 in the NHL list. This is something that we do in all four major sports every summer, going through and ranking all the top players, taking one per team on average. So when we do the NFL one, it's the top 32 list. For the other sports, it's the top 30. We've already done the NBA one with Ben Chu of that NBALotteryPick.com, assessing the FDH list, and Russ will be performing the same services here. He has been, assessing our lists. We've been doing it for hockey longer mm-hmm. than any other sport. It's the last couple of years now, and Russ was given a copy of the list earlier today, and you can find it, of course, the same place that you find this show, at the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. So as we get started with this, Russ, you and I talked off-air a little bit. More difficult, I thought, to compile the list this year. It seems like the tide is rising in the NHL. That was the case in the NBA, as Ben and I discussed. It seems like in both sports, it's getting harder and harder to do a list like this. So our discussion should really be interesting as we start breaking it down.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's a lot of young stars in the NHL, and then there's a lot of guys who are sort of maturing late. And so the mix of those and maybe, you know, a couple of veterans falling off or falling down, it's really sort of mixed things up a lot. And even in the top 10, you know, 5 years ago, there probably wasn't that much change in it, but now a lot.
There really is. And just to give you a sense of what it was like even 2 years ago, we had Martin St-Louis 11th on the list, Chris Letang 13th. So guys will drop off of the list even from a higher point on there, and we're going to get into in a second here the guys who dropped off of it from last year. But I know you know as a Rangers fan, Martin Louis, 11th best player in the world. That seems longer than 2 years ago.
It does, and it's a shame because St. Louis really just had a rough playoff. He had a nice regular season, but when the playoffs hit, you know, those extra games on a 40-year-old body when you're expected to keep the speed going, very grueling. And that, to me, that's where hockey really just gets tough, because it's like it's already a tough sport. You already have to figure out how to work your eye hand and your legs, and then you play 82 games, and then you got to go, what is it, another 17? It's crazy.
Yeah, the physical grind is very, very unforgiving, no question about that. And there are some guys who are dropping off of the list from last year who seem to be, in some ways, a victim of the physical grind. Going down the list here, we'll start with the guys who fell off of it from a year ago. And as we'll get into once we start examining the list
there's a good chance
some of them bouncing back on the list. We've seen this the last couple of years, Ross. Sometimes a guy will come off of it for 1 year, bounce back up the next year. So certainly that
just
is something
to correct it.
Possible.
I want to correct it. The 17 is probably St. Louis' number, like, you know, Taves had to play 23 because they played next year's series. So just to to put it in perspective, I was just given the Ranger number, but, like, guys had to play even more than that. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's an amazing, amazing thing, and the toll that it can take on you. And as you mentioned with Taves, you know, the Blackhawks playing into June every year. That was one of the reasons, actually, that I picked against them in the final. I thought that Tampa might come at it a little bit fresher, and especially with Chicago having played Anaheim the previous round. Obviously, I was wrong about that, but that just goes to show you the toll that it can take on you. A couple of these guys, I think, certainly are very good candidates to bounce back onto the list next year. We'll start with the highest ones to fall off of the list. Last year, Phil Kessel was 13th. He falls off the list. You also have Tuukka Rask, who is 15th. Patrick Sharp, 16th. Zdeno Chara, 17th. Anze Kopitar, 18th. Chris Kunitz, 21st. Patrick Marleau, 22nd. Henrik Zetterberg, 23rd. I love Hank, but I don't know if he's going to be back on this list. Alexander Steen, 25th. Taylor Hall, 26th. James Neal, 28th. Shea Weber, 30th. So some of these guys, depending on where they are on the career curve, Russ, seem like they could be back on the list next year, but as it's increasingly getting to be a young man's league, it does seem like the younger you are, the better your odds.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, look, Kopitar, I could see getting back on it. Kessel, I mean, he gets 25 goals every year, but it's more than that you need. Shea Weber, same thing. He had a really good year. He didn't have enough points, but on most years, like, he could literally be on this list next year, not the year after. You know, it's up and down sometimes for defensemen, especially offensive ones.
Absolutely, and the fact that he was 30th, I mean, that's almost sort of the epitome of somebody who could be back on the list next year, because he was really only one spot away from missing it last year. So he's it seems like he's perennially on that bubble and very well could be there.
It's probably why he won't win a Norris this year. I mean, for Shea Weber, he's really going up against himself. I mean, he had 15 goals, which, again, for a defenseman, 15 goals is terrific, and he had 45 points. Like,
yep.
That's a good year.
Exactly, exactly. It's a good year, but there were some defensemen who put up some better offensive numbers. And, again, the Norris isn't all about the offense, but it is something that does help you stand out. And what's interesting is, the man who is considered by many at this point in time, coming off of the playoffs, the Conn Smythe Trophy winner, potentially the best defenseman in the world right now, Duncan Keith, that kind of goes to show you, again, the fragility of rankings. He was not a Norris Trophy finalist, notwithstanding the fact that if you were to do the balloting today, a lot of people would be voting for him.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's funny because every defenseman that's won a Conn Smythe is in the Hall of Fame.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense. You've really got to be an impact player to be able to bring that home. And that will reflect on your Hall of Fame qualifications at the end of your career. It does seem to go hand in hand. The structure of the list is a little bit different this year. Had a longer first tier, I think, than usual, and a relatively short second tier. So let's tackle the second tier, count our way up from that. At number 30, Claude Giroux, he has been up and down on the list the last couple of years. He was ninth last year. He has the biggest fall of anybody remaining on the list, 21 spots. Number 29 is Kevin Shattenkirk, who was not on the list last year. Number 28, Joe Pavelski. He was 12th last year. He has the third biggest fall of anyone still on the list of 16 spots. Nicholas Backstrom, not on the list last year, but he's 27th this year. He was 25th the year before. So that's, again, sort of one of those examples of a guy who many years is borderline. Some years he makes it, some years he doesn't. He gets onto the list this year. Number 26 is Jacob Voracek, who was 26th the year before, but not on the list last year. Like Backstrom, really kind of on that bubble and has made it two of the last 3 years, including this year. So you got five guys right there. You got two Flyers among them. It was a disappointing year for the Flyers, and it really kind of, I think, reflected in where their stars ended up on the list. But your thoughts on the second tier of the list, Russ, 26 to 30.
Yeah, I think like Giroux, I mean, he definitely suffered a little bit with the team, but, you know, suffering at 73 points and 25 goals. I mean, he still had a really good year. And Voracek had a terrific year, so I think you ranked him justly. And he had 81 points. 81. In this day and age, it's almost like getting 100. It is. And so, but again, it's not all about just points. And so when you rank him against some of the other guys, he is only just a plus one. And you know, there's other factors. So I think he's in a just spot, and I think he'll continue to move up. I do. Nick Backstrom had a heck of a year. I mean, just a heck of a year. And yet Voracek did deserve to be a little higher than him. So, you know, I like these. You know, Shattenkirk, if he didn't get hurt, I think he would have been higher. And if the Sharks were a little better, I think Pavelski would have been higher.
Yes, definitely. And A note that you sent me, this seems like the proper time to ask you about that, as far as guys that you thought could have been on the list. You mentioned Gaudreau and Kuznetsov. If they were to be on the list, if they were to edge their way on onto the top 30 here, who are the guys you think that they might displace out of these five?
I would think if I put Gaudreau, it might be Pavelski.
Okay.
Because I think Pavelski had a good year, but and he probably had more points than Gaudreau, but Gaudreau was just so instrumental in everything he did for his team. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He just went leaps and bounds. Yeah, he, you know, Pavelski had 70 points, 37 goals, and that's a heck of a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt like, you know, Pavelski, we've seen where we could probably get more than that out of him. He had 79 the year before, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think that's sort of fair. And then, you know, a guy like Kuznetsov will really be next year. You know, when I really sort of think about it again, he can't be in this list yet because he didn't have enough points. He didn't play long enough this year. But I think he's more of a guy for next year where he could do that.
Well, you know what? It's a good thing that you were mentioning that just now, because what I have failed to do until now is to mention the criteria. This would be, again,
yeah,
as we've said in the past, non-fantasy. So this is all around as far as how we would gauge players, tried to go beyond what the numbers showed, although
uh-huh.
the advanced stats were definitely helpful as well. But and the thought would be, if you're starting a team that's going to be playing an 82-game season starting today and taking into it. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, we wouldn't want any Blackhawks because they're just coming off the playoffs. No, you assume freshness. Who would you want
right.
for your team as you're assembling it to go forward for a new season? So that's our second tier right there. We'll,
and that's where I think, like, Gaudreau, he's 21, right? So Pavelski's
right.
older than that, much
yes.
older. And so I think that's good. And, you know, a guy like Kuznetsov, I think, is also, even though he played all those years in Russia, I want to say he's 21 or 22. And so, again, there's just so much talent there. And he didn't maybe have the points this year, but I think, you know, we've seen where he is going to have that. So, yeah, this is where this list gets interesting.
Yes. Oh, definitely. It does. And the next chunk of the list, we've got it going from 1 to 25 on the top tier. So we'll break this up into pieces. We'll back up here 25 to 16 as we look at the bottom of the first tier. We start at number 25 with Rick Nash, who was not on the list last year, and to my memory, hasn't been on it the last couple of years, but a tremendous year in being the offensive force pacing the Rangers to the President's Trophy for the regular season. Number 24, P.K. Subban, who was 29th a year ago. Number 23, Ryan Getzlaf. He has the second biggest fall on the list of anybody who remained. He drops 18 spots. Number 22, Pekka Rinne. He was not on the list last year, but again, he always feels like a guy who could make the list in a given year. Number 21, Erik Karlsson, pretty consistent. He was 20th the year before. Number 20, Devan Dubnyk. He was not on the list the year before, of course, as he kind of came from nowhere once the Minnesota trade happened. It's always a tough thing to slot the hot goalies in here. Craig Anderson made the list once a couple of years ago, and I think Dubnyk's got more staying power, but we'll have to see about that. Number 19.
Well, and there may be a bidding war soon for Dubnyk, so that'll be interesting
Could
to
be.
See.
Could be. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're mentioning the free agents for this summer in Pro Hockey Draftology 2015, which is, of course,
mm-hmm.
Fueled in large part by your player analysis. One of the features that we have in there as well is on free agency for this summer. And, yeah, he's the big-ticket item if it doesn't work out in Minnesota, no question about that. And they have a lot
mm-hmm.
of money tied up in the goalie position already. So,
they may be stuck with Nick Backstrom based on his injury, and they won't be able to move him, and they won't be able to buy him out if he's injured.
Yeah, that's a tough spot for them to be in. But Dubnyk makes the list for the first time at number 20. At number 19, somebody who makes the list for the first time but he is going to be a regular on this list for years and years to come. Victor Hedman cracks it for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody who, again, probably would have been the Conn Smythe winner, if not Tyler Johnson, if Tampa Bay had hoisted the cup in the end. Number 18, Henrik Lundqvist. He was 19th a year ago, so like Erik Karlsson, a lot of stability in where he was at on the list from year to year. Number 17.
Bunch of Swedes there. You got a couple, you got a run of Swedes there.
I do. It's going to get broken up here, though. Number 17 is Corey Perry. He was fourth a year ago. Fourth biggest fall, 13 spots. This is one of the things I'm sure we're going to talk about, is the plummet of the Ducks on the list here, notwithstanding an excellent year for the Ducks. And the last one to look at in this chunk, number 16, Patrick Kane, 14th a year ago. So some stability for a couple of guys at this point here, whether it be Patrick Kane, whether it be Lundqvist, whether it be Karlsson, a couple of new guys cracking the list, a couple of Ducks just plummeting out of the top 10. So all kinds of things to look at here when you're going 16 to 25 on the list.
Yeah, I mean, at 25, I mean, Nash had a hell of a year. He had over 40 goals. I think he had 42. But if this were counting the playoffs, where he only had five,
right,
he would have a little bit of a problem. But, again, regular season, no question he helped pace the Rangers to the President's Trophy, which is the most meaningless trophy in hockey, but he did it, and he definitely helped them get home ice, and it worked for a little while. So he deserves to be on the list for that reason. P.K. Subban, I just get this feeling because he rubs some people the wrong way, they sort of overlook the talent, and he does bring a lot of intangibles. Like there are people that are legitimately thrown off their game when they play against Subban, and he does not only dominate them sometimes, but he just outthinks them. And there are some, there's definitely some players where he gets under their skin, and so he's just got this great ability for that. And again, he scores 60 points this year too with 15 goals. So let's not take that away from him. The physical part of his game is terrific too. Getzlaf is a great player, but I could see the little bit of a fall in the Ducks. I mean, they are getting a little older, their core, and so that seems just. Pekka Rinne is lucky he's in that spot, and I think that was based more on the first half of the season than the second half, right? Because the second half seemed like he faded a little bit. Karlsson's just unbelievable. I mean, all of a sudden you looked up this year and you're like, wow. Look at, Ottawa all of a sudden, they got a hot goalie. They got to the playoffs. Erik Karlsson, always a stud, but you just 66 points. In this era, 21 goals. 21.
Yep.
That's crazy. So he deserves everything there and more. Dubnyk, years ago, I really liked him when he was a first rounder. I followed him for a few years and intently waiting, and maybe just the Edmonton system was sort of flawed for him, and then he goes to Minnesota and boy, now he's a hot commodity. So we'll see what happens. Hedman's been steadily emerging for years, and it's funny because I remember some people, based on the fact that he was the second pick in the draft, thought, whoa, look at Victor Hedman, he could be a bust, and that was being said maybe like 3 years ago, and you just see now the way the game is and the way he could just be dominant in the game. I mean, it's pretty tremendous. But for a while, Tampa was taking a beating because John Tavares was certainly ahead of him. And so I like where Hedman is. Lundqvist is consistent. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so we don't expect that to change. And he was a big reason again this year. Even with injury, when he came back from injury, he still was right back. He didn't miss a beat. Corey Perry is just a tremendous player. I know he's Mike Milbury's favorite player, but he really is. And I say that in jest, right? Because
right.
Mike Milbury said I think he would beat him up basically in a cleaner version. He said that on the air, and it's like whatever. Corey Perry is a number one pest, and he did only have 55 points. His assist level dropped out of sight, but he still had 33 goals. It's a difference of 55 points and 82. It's a difference of now being 30 and not being like 29. He's out of his 20s. He's in his 30s. Like, he'll have to make an adjustment, but he's still a pretty great player. And Patrick, we didn't get to the Patrick Kane part yet, so we'll wait.
Well, let's do Kane before we get into the top 15 here. What do you think about his placement on the list? I had him pretty constant from year to year, 16 when he was 14th last year.
And he's really consistent. I mean, this is a guy now who had a miraculous recovery from a shoulder injury, and he came back probably a month or more early. He still managed to have 64 points in 61 games. I mean, more than a point a game. He's close to a point a game in his career. He had 27 goals. He just means so much. He was a point a game in the playoffs, and yet everybody was nitpicking because his last round he wasn't doing great. 23 points in 23 games, I'll take it. And then the final game, a goal and an assist on the two goals they had. I mean, I don't know what else people want out of this guy. The best story I can tell is when he was drafted in 2007, we did a pre-draft show out on the concourse, and some Blackhawks fans booed us because they didn't want a small player, because back in 2007, the league was bigger, and getting a small player like this, they were scared. And, of course, 205 goals later, I don't think they're that scared, and 48 in the playoffs.
Well, nobody will cop to it these days. There's a lot of splinters that people are suffering from, folks who jumped onto the Chicago bandwagon the last couple of years. All of a sudden, they've always been the greatest hockey town in the universe, eh, Russ?
Yeah, well, when Sportsology came into existence in 2000, we did send a guy, and the Blackhawks were thankful in those years, and those were the lean years, the Eric Daze years, the Kyle Calder years. It took a little while, we know.
No question about it. Let me ask you about Rick Nash before we move to the top 15 here, because, and I don't know why when I go to ask you this question, it's not just where you're at geographically, but I'm sort of thinking of Philly guys here. Rick Nash, with the expectations that were on him at the beginning of his career, in terms of whether or not, as excellent as his career has been, has it been a disappointment? Relative to, I tend to think along the lines of a Lindros, a Donovan McNabb, an Iverson, guys mm-hmm. who had a lot of expectations coming into their careers and did a lot, but didn't seem to live up to the lofty expectations. 12, 13 years ago, Rick Nash was supposed to be one of the defining players of this generation, and in all fairness to him, I don't think he has been. Do you sense that he's come up short in terms of how he was expected to be?
I do, but the funny thing about it is he still has 378 goals. So, my rough math is you're like 122 away from that magic number. The one nice thing about hockey is they don't seem to have steroid numbers that are affecting big records, and 500 goals is a big deal. So if he's got to get 122 goals, I don't think he's going to get 40 every year. So let's say he gets 30. So he's got to go four. So by the time he's 35, he could do that. If you get 500 goals, you generally at some point make the Hall of Fame. Dino Cicerelli, it took a while. I think it still would take a while for Rick Nash for all those reasons you said. I think even with 500 goals, he's not a point-a-game player. He doesn't have any hardware other than the Richard Trophy, but you got that for just having the most goals in the league. A nice accomplishment, but didn't get voted in any awards. Doesn't have any postseason hardware, so I think it's just. I do.
Well, you talk about not having the steroid numbers of baseball. I'd argue it goes the other way to where numbers even mean a little bit more because of the 10 years plus of the league having the Draymond Green clutching and grabbing defense here, which I hope it didn't sound too bitter by saying that. But you had with the neutral zone trap and all of that.
Hey, how about those Indians? They lose 15-0 today.
Sorry, I got to hang my hat on these days, but it almost means a little bit more, doesn't it, for guys like Nash, who when he came into the league, it was towards the tail end of that era there. It's the opposite of baseball, where sometimes the numbers mean more depending on how much of your career you played then.
Yeah, no question. And he's had some concussions, we have to be fair.
But I
totally agree with you. And that's the interesting thing about hockey is there's been so many changes over the years. 80s was wide open, then there was clutch and grab, then there was just not dead puck, but things slowed down a lot, and now the game's wide open again. And you think about it, and it's like, even though you have a hard time matching up different years, different eras, different decades, 500 goals has really held up, though. because it's really something that is hard to do, because even in the wide open game, yes, more guys got 500, but still lesser players didn't get that, you know, like, and just, I'm going to look up a guy and I don't want to necessarily be picking on him too much, but like, as an example, like Bernie Federko, you know, mm-hmm. way more than a point a game player. I mean, and you could say maybe he's not a goal scorer, and he wasn't, right, because he was a centerman, but 369 goals. You know, so, I mean, and he played for, you know, a long time. He played, looks like he probably played 12, 13, 14 years. So you look at that and you say, okay, you know, I mean, there are guys in there. Another one, maybe I do mean to pick on this one because of all the problems that he used to give the New York Rangers, Clark Gillies. You know, he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Obviously, you know, a big enforcer, a big reason the Islanders had all those winning teams, but 304 goals in 12 years.
Right.
Like, he didn't get 500, and he was playing in a wide-open era, and he was getting 30 a year, but his body just couldn't hold up. So somehow because of, and it's maybe because of attrition, because it's just such a hard game, and guys get injured, and they do get concussions and everything else, that 500 is a pretty good equalizer.
It really is, no question about it. And a couple of the guys on the list yet to come are clearly going to reach that point. Some of them are really closing in on it, like the next guy on the list. We'll take the next chunk from 15 to 3, because I think the top two is going to be a conversation unto itself. So as we continue to move up the list, number 15, Pavel Datsyuk. He was 27th a year ago, second biggest jump on the list here, 12 spots. But ahead of him, a couple of guys who are jumping onto it for the first time. Number 14, Max Pacioretty, doing a lot to carry the burden of the offense in Montreal. That's a team that traditionally has not been very deep offensively. They count on him for a lot, and he really produced this year. Number 13, Vladimir Tarasenko, when we talk about the young players in the league really making an impact, he did so in a huge, huge way. Number 12, Yuri Hudler, guy who's been around a little bit of time and once wore the winged wheel, but it didn't get it done there nearly to the extent. Number 12 on the list, and has not been on the list previously. Number 11, Tyler Johnson, somebody who was also not on the list last year or previously, but again, all of America got to see, well, the world actually, but no reason to single out my country, but the world got to see what he was doing under the bright lights of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and he had a heck of a run. Speaking of which, number 10, Duncan Keith, he was 24th a year ago. Biggest jump on the list, 14 spots, and again, as the Conn Smythe winner, that really cements him as quite possibly the best defenseman in the game today. Certainly, if you look at the list here, we would make that case. Number 9, Evgeny Malkin. He was 6th a year ago. It's been a little bit of a slow drip for him down the list the last two, three years. Number 8, Carey Price. Highest debut on the list. He was, of course, not on it last year. But again, a guy the last couple of years who's always a threat to make it. And like Pacioretty, was so huge in the success of Montreal again this season. Number 7, Tyler Seguin. He was 7th a year ago. Tremendous consistency on his part in Dallas. I bet they miss him in Boston these days. Number 6, Steven Stamkos. 2nd a year ago, and this is a thing. I'm sure we'll talk about this more in a second. I compare him to some of the guys on the list, the NBA list that we did, like Chris Paul, who tumbled a few spots. It was more so based on other guys jumping up, and I think Stamkos was kind of a victim, if you will, of that, because the competition towards the top was steep. Number 5, the points leader in the NHL for this year, Jamie Benn. He was 8th a year ago, and if you're talking about guys who really aren't known outside the hockey bubble, he might be the very best of them right now, playing in the relative anonymity of Dallas. He is carving out an excellent career for himself. Number 4, John Tavares. He was 10th a year ago, a great jump for him. And number 3, Alex Ovechkin, 11th a year ago. He was at 11th, for a man of his skill level, that's kind of being buried. And he was there a year ago largely because of his abysmal plus-minus rating, but he really turned his game around this year in Washington and was a big, big, big part of their success. And back in the top 5 where a man of his skill level belongs, Russ, no question.
Yeah, you know, I'll take it with, boy, I'll take it with Yuri Hudler at 31. 31 goals, a career high. He's had 25 before for Detroit, but that's pretty tremendous. Tyler Johnson, boy, the funny thing is we hear like, oh, well, you know, this guy could be the next Tyler Johnson, and you kind of wish that the guy wouldn't be, because if he had to go and play for all these different teams, ECHL included, and then get back to the NHL, it'd take a long time. So I don't know if anybody wants to go that same path. Keith is Keith. I mean, he played over 700 minutes in the playoffs. I mean, that's just unbelievable. The amount of ice time he logs, which is something that you definitely would take into account for this list, is incredible. Malkin's great. I mean, but, you know, Malkin seems to play better without Crosby. It's a weird thing. So at some point, will they uncouple them as teammates? You know, they might. I mean, I could see that could happen. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. Keeping up with the list, Carey Price just had a career year, and he's been building towards this. And so I think he was the best goalie in the NHL this year. I do. And I think this is just – because this is about as high as you could put a goalie, really. I don't know if you've ever had a goalie higher. Seguin, I mean, 37 goals but 40 assists. That's tremendous. And we always knew he had the talent. I knew. It was always Taylor, Tyler, and so I was happy to see him break out. And Stamkos, I just looked it up. He has, like, 272 goals. He's going to be one of the youngest to 500 when he does it. And he missed a lot of a season with a broken leg, right? So pretty tremendous player. Could he have played better in the playoffs? Sure. But, you know, guys key on him. He's still young. Jamie Benn, I think he's benefiting from Tyler Seguin as well as his great play. 87 points. 87. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. 35 goals. He's been building towards it, too. That is a guy that, I'll tell you, not a lot of people gave him enough credit. He was a fifth-round pick. Let's just let that settle in for a while.
Yeah, wow.
That's tremendous. Tavares is Tavares. You know, I think I forgot to talk about Datsyuk. You know, he'll never get 500 goals, and he's almost a point a game, and he played for the Red Army. Like, he's already a Hall of Famer. Getting back to Tavares, just had a great year, and the Islanders now are finally a better team. And so now Tavares is able to take his game even to a new level, and he still doesn't have great line mates. If you ever gave him, like, a Mike Bossy type, the same way actually more of a Trottier type, because he really is the Bossy. If he ever had that, I don't even know how great he could be. And he already had 38 goals, 86 points. I mean, again, you get to 86 points in this league, you're getting to 100. Ovechkin had a great year, great comeback year. Give Barry Trotz all the credit in the world. He got him back on track. Good for him. Good for Alex. It's always going to be tough, because people are going to say, until he does something in the playoffs as far as advancing to the Stanley Cup, that it's not, you know, that it's going to be on him. But hockey's tough. It's a team game. One guy can't do it. You even saw LeBron James could only get the Cleveland Cavaliers so far with all their injuries. So in hockey, one guy can't do it. Crosby's still Crosby, man. I mean, you could say what you want about him, and I'll still tell you he's the best player in hockey. But I will say I understand having Taves ahead of him. There are a lot of people that are starting to think that way. And, you know, when you do take into account the intangibles and the fact that who he has to line up against all the time and seems to rise to every occasion, it's pretty tremendous. I mean, he only has 66 points.
Yeah.
You know, but there are so many other reasons that he would be in this list that I totally, totally get it. So, I really like it. I mean, and again, for all the people that bash Crosby, he had 84 points. I mean, that's a bad year for Sidney Crosby, considering he had 104 the year before.
Well, you know, and this is Mr. FantasyDraftHelp.com putting his money where his mouth is. I said this wasn't a fantasy list, and again, the difference in production between Taves and Crosby on paper proves that. Sidney Crosby, as you alluded to, second. He was first a year ago. We were waiting to finish this list until the Stanley Cup Finals were done. Jonathan Taves jumps from third to first this year, and I was going to make the same move last year if Chicago got past L.A. and was able to win the Stanley Cup in the final. This is a thing here. I think we kind of tend to see this more in football, the whole sort of Marino-Montana dynamic. And it's actually much older in football than I think a lot of people realize. You go back to Sid Luckman and Sammy Baugh in the 40s. You sort of have the modern equivalent now of it with Brady and Manning. albeit that's gotten a little bit blurred because Brady's become more of a stat machine and Manning has actually won a Super Bowl and made it to two others. But this whole sort of thing of stats versus winning, essentially. And to a certain extent in the NBA, Russell and Chamberlain in the 60s. And this is really something, again, for as much as hockey sort of struggles to get a wedge into the mainstream on a consistent basis, you know, this is something that I would think that would really be getting played up in league circles going forward here because, you know, this is a classic rivalry. Taves now has the three cups to Crosby's one. They both have the same number of gold medals. And, again, Crosby blows him away on paper, as he does a good chunk of the league. But if you're coming down to who would you start a team with, that's almost the classic kind of question right now, the classic barstool argument between these guys, is it not?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they're exactly the same age, actually. Let's see. Taves is 27 and 49 days old, and Crosby is 27 and 0.314. I don't even know what it was. Those 0.49 to 0.314. So I guess Crosby's older. I'm not going to look at their birthdays. It's really close in that regard. In points, it's not close, but in everything else, it is. But again, now if we start taking into account hardware, I mean, Crosby's got more hardware. I mean, he's got Hart's, Pearson's, and I think Taves is going to start to win those. You know, Taves has a Conn Smythe and a Selke. He doesn't have any other major hardware. Crosby does have that. So now we're sort of trading off the hardware for rings, and I can't hold it against Crosby for the rings because, again, it's not all about him. Malkin's got to step up too. He's had concussion problems, right? Look, there were 2 years where he only played 56 games. There were 3 years where he barely – those 3 years was a full season, and yet we're still talking about a guy with 853 points in 627 games. That's unbelievable still.
Right, and the fact that when you get into the Hart Trophy, the thing that seems to be unique about hockey to me, doing these lists for every one of the big four sports, is that you very commonly have a player who wins the Hart Trophy who most people would not bother to make a case for as the best player in the world at present, versus in the NBA, it almost seems to be a matter of sort of the world heavyweight title of individual production here. And in doing the basketball one, I started toying around with it during May, and I had the sense I was going to go LeBron 1, Curry 2, and the way the playoffs played out, that just reinforced what I was thinking, and now that seems to be the world's consensus. Steph Curry deservedly the MVP of the league this year. That doesn't make you the best player in the world at present. We've seen the distinction between that. In hockey, it almost sort of seems to be random as far as who wins it in a given year. The Hart Trophy winner is clearly one of the best players in the world at a given point in time, but it doesn't seem as definitive as in other sports where Mike Trout wins the MVP. Oh, yeah, he's the best baseball player in the world. In hockey, the Hart Trophy winner may or may not be the best player, and it seems like frequently they're not.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Again, this is so much fun. It really is. We split hairs at the end here, but when we start talking about all these names, we realize, boy, the NHL's got a lot of talent, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. Just the guys who got shoved off the edge there at the end who have a chance to get back on next year, yeah. And as you mentioned, Phil Kessel, I mean, he sort of had the Ovechkin-type season from a year ago, except it was even worse and it was even uglier because Toronto's year was much worse than what Washington even had a year ago. So, you know, Kessel, who still, again, wouldn't miss a list of the top 30 in the world by very much, even at this low ebb. Seems like he could very well be back on next year under Mike Babcock. So you go on and on about the amount of talent that hockey has, and it's definitely on an upswing, just like the NBA right now. We've done two of these lists, and there's a real commonality there.
Did that hurt to say that about Mike Babcock?
it did and it didn't.
Okay.
I mean, listen, I've never had the warm spot for him personally that I did for Scotty Bowman. I think he's the best coach in hockey, and as a Wings fan, I'll miss him. But he's the same guy that pushed Steve Yzerman out the door without a second thought. So
it's just a tough year for you, though, with teams that you're rooting for. Like, you're getting some results, and then in other parts you're getting kicked in the jewels. It's tough.
Well, yeah. But, if you're talking about the Cavs, and I'm sure that's a big part of it there, when Love and Irving went down, it was pretty much over. And as I said to you off air during the finals when we were up 2-1, got to hope for the miracle. I compared it to your miracle Mets, and it almost was. If they had kept on through game four, I think it would have ended a different way. Nonetheless,
yeah.
The 51-year drought continues, but it's a great thing to be able to occupy my mind with lists such as this one and the chance to break this down with you. And, again, another fun one that we had here, and we will have this, of course, embedded on the cover of Pro Hockey Draftology 2015, which is, of course, powered by your great player ratings and analysis. So that can be found, of course, in the days to come at Sportsology, FantasyDraftHelp.com, and TheFDHLounge.com. Thank you again, my man, for a great conversation, for your analysis of this list. And already can't wait for the next 365 days to go by so we can do this again.
I agree. Take care, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Russ. And I know we'll get in some other conversations, of course, between now and then. Thank you so much, Russ. And thank you all for listening today to this joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.